In this debate, I'm not going to go over the principles that there's a benefit here in the use of data. I think that that conversation is now pretty well decided. What we had this afternoon was a foundation roundtable, and we had some wonderful contributions. One of the areas that we spoke a lot about was what happens when a work is derived from data. And I am unashamedly going to derive some of the things I say today from the data that I received in that roundtable, because there were some really rather novel and interesting ideas. The first thing to say is, I think as soon as you mention the word data and it's in a government context, open data becomes part of the conversation. But I must stress that it is not the whole story. There are many data sources which will never be open, are proprietary, have commercial or security value, and we have to answer the question in the entirety of those and with the interaction between them. So the debate is about a lot more than open data. So is there a paradigm shift going on? Well, I'm absolutely convinced there is. And one of the reasons is there's a paradigm shift going on in all of the components that feed into that question. The data itself is undergoing incredible change. So not only the amount of data and the sources, but the type of data. So data traditionally was data that had been gathered for one very defined task. It might be, for example, people's names and addresses, and that would go into technology called a database, which was designed to do one thing, and it would all be very formally recorded and clean and everything. Well, the world has changed. Vast amounts of the data being generated now are what's called unstructured. It's things like lumps of prose, video, audio, and these do not work in the same way. But moreover, because they're more general, you're more likely to find unexpected things in there. So we're seeing a revolution in the type of data and the amount. And that is only going to become more so. For example, when you see the Internet of Things coming, we're going to have devices all over the place generating even more data. And then we're also seeing a new world where the ability to take data from completely independent sources and bring it together to give an answer, what's called in the trade data fusion, means that we can find out things that were never possible before. It also means that in an unintended way, we can find out lots of things that we couldn't have found out before. And that actually is part of the problem. And then the new thinking also, standards are great. If you have them and they're there, they're wonderful, but most of the time you don't. And to give you an idea how difficult standards are, shipping containers go around the world with a number printed on them at the moment because no one ever really got the standard sorted out. So although it's something you always want, it's something you often cannot get. And the technologies have moved on from needing that. So for example, if you were taking a standards approach to a library, you would have every shelf classified with books on it. None of us find our information that way now. We type a search into Google. That hasn't done that classification, and we get the answers. So given the cost of some of those standard operations, it's very important to understand whether it is worth doing that standardization exercise. If you do it at the beginning, it may well just be part of the process. The next paradigm change is the technology. The new algorithms around analytics can find insight among very dirty, incomplete and sometimes even inaccurate data and get some really stunning results. And again, this leads us to a change. The cost and effort that's sometimes put into data cleansing, which is considered a very good practice when you came from the database world, may again not be worth the benefit. And it may mean that you can take large amounts of data, not put any effort into cleaning it and find insight. And then perhaps the biggest change we're reading about at the moment, seeing, is machine learning. Systems where intelligences are affecting all sorts of tasks now, from the legal profession to financial profession, autonomous vehicles. And these systems learn from example, which means data is incredibly important to them. And they need a very large amount of data. So what are the issues and the barriers to get the sort of benefits that Nigel was talking about? Well, obviously, security and privacy. They're not the same thing, but they're very closely intertwined. And the initial sort of first reaction to this problem was, say, well, what we can do is we can anonymize the data. We can take the data, take people's names off it, and then we can use it. But actually, because of the power of the algorithms now, it's very easy in most cases to de-anonymize the data and get back to where you started. So that method doesn't work. Now, it's an area where there's lots of research going on and all sorts of cunning methods that people are trying. But at the moment, it looks like it may be a fundamentally difficult problem to keep that anonymity without actually undermining the information that you want. Then we have questions like, who owns the data? Big issue, and again, your first reaction might be, well, I should own my data. But what if my data actually leads to a very significant societal good? And I then own the data and I have to give informed consent. Well, again, informed consent sounds like motherhood and apple pie. Of course that's a good idea. But the situation is a little bit different. If you're giving informed consent for a hip operation, it's a very specific thing you're being asked, and that can be explained to you. If you're being asked to give informed consent for your use of your data, the possibilities may actually move out. So, for example, we could say, I'll give you a cheaper insurance policy if you put a tracking thing in your car, which, by the way, has been remarkably popular. What happens if the tracking thing works out that this particular vehicle is likely, type of vehicle, is likely to burst into flames? Well, if we haven't had consent for that use of the data, then even though that's something we would really like to know, we can't actually get that benefit from it. So the point here is, though it's a very good place to start, it may not be sufficient in this new world, or indeed that this particular corner on the A38 on cold mornings causes accidents or whatever. And this brings us on to having to get more sophisticated in how we think about data. So the current European Union concept of data is around access. So we have the concept of data protection and data controllers. But actually, once data has been accessed, it's very hard to put it back. And it gets out there and it gets used for different things and it moves on and it becomes a derivative of itself and all sorts of things. So actually, perhaps we need to start thinking about controlling data by what is done to it. What is the purpose of what is done to it? If the purpose is in our benefit and is good. Now, that may sound like a strange idea, but for example, it's already one we use in accounting. You can have two accounting operations the same, but what matters is why was it done? What was the reason? That may be a solution, but I think we need to get more sophisticated than just thinking about access. And then the practicalities of how we make this work. So one of the things you find when you go into government departments is they'll have generally more legacy structured data, and they're very proprietary about it. They don't want to let that out. But also they're slightly embarrassed because they know it's a bit dirty. And so actually what they want to do is spend a lot of time cleaning it up before they give it to you. Well, actually, in today's technology world, we should just accept that data is often dirty and it can be useful in that form. And then without having that impediment, it can be used. And I think the important thing about some of these examples where you're using existing data is the way to think of it is more like you've suddenly been given all the mud out of the bottom of a river. Nearly all of it's mud, but occasionally there's a nugget of gold. So if you're going to do that, you need to find a way of getting through the mud that really is cheap and cost-effective rather than sitting there and hand-sifting everything. So the way that you need to think about data is to say, if I have a way of using very little effort to get answers, then it may well be cost-benefit analysis positive. But if I have to preemptively do a lot of work to the data for an unknown return, then it's not going to happen. And this comes back to, do we want perfect data or do we want good results from imperfect data? I was thinking. One of the most fascinating areas when we look at data is data has a life. Once it's out, it grows, it mates, it mutates, it changes. And there are derivatives that come from the data. So there are results. And what happens to who owns those? And the thinking here, I think, is getting out of date. So people say, well, if you use my data to make something, then I still own the outcome of that, and there's various attempts to create licenses. But an analogy that came out today was a very good one. If you're a student and you go to a library and you read all the books and then you write a book, no one's claiming that the books you read are actually the author should own your work, provided you haven't copied it line for line. And it's going to be the same with these systems. And this becomes particularly difficult when we look at things where we actually might argue that perhaps we shouldn't have a fully open model. Let me give you a very simple example. taxpayers' money pays for the NHS. The record keeping in NHS has not been as great as it could have been in the past from an electronic point of view. There's effort going into that that's going to cost money, but the data will be great. We're also doing things like the Human Genome Project that's getting a lot of information. Now, if we're looking at this from a research point of view, then we generally start from an idea that knowledge is for mankind and the information is open and hopefully people will do good things with it. But what happens if we pay to create all that data in the UK and then we give it to someone else who then creates a service or a drug which they come back and they charge the NHS for perhaps some exorbitant rate? Well, in that situation, actually, the data is very important. We should have a process that says this is strategic data, and if you're going to do this, we want you, for example, to give the NHS a good deal on the results or to do your R&D in the UK. We must not be, in this new day age where data has become so important, shy about realising the value of our data. And the reason why that's important is that commercial organisations, like the large ones you saw on that slide earlier, absolutely understand the strategic value of data. If you look at a Facebook and you go and you look at how investment analysts value that, it's because of the data that it has. You know, in the corporate case, multi-billion companies like Salesforce.com, it's because of the data they have. And this is only going to become more the case. So, for example, in machine learning, the most important thing you need to create all these wonderful new things is the data. So our data is not worthless, it's very valuable. And whilst in some cases we should take a very open approach and get the benefit from that, we need to be careful in other cases to realise that this is a strategic asset and it must not be given away without considering the effect for the UK or societal benefit through the UK government. And it's very easy to see the benefits from purely open data. But the problem with purely open data is it doesn't track investment. And so there are cases where actually where the data's not open, you can get very large amounts of investments. And we see this, and in fact, whilst it was fashionable for a while for companies to do things like open source and open data, actually those companies have not fared very well, and a lot of the model has moved back to a more proprietary one. Now, there is no right answer here, and it's case by case. But that's really what I'm saying. We need to be alive to the fact that data can be strategically important to the country and have value which we can use ourselves if we are careful about which data we do what with. What about these societal attitudes to these issues? Well, the most important thing is benefits, I think, are very convincing. You can also see the cost in risk of privacy, etc. And that will become more obvious. You know, there may be certain things, for example, the benefit of using data in oncology, which is obviously a very serious situation that someone finds themselves in if they're ill, are actually, you know, capable of showing clinical differentiation. That will become something which it is hard for people not to appreciate and will drive things forward. But I actually have come to the conclusion that we're trying to solve a lot of problems that aren't solvable in data. There will be data breaches. 80% of the FTSE 100 already have a significant infiltration in their network. The modern thinking in cybersecurity is you can't keep the bad guys out and you will never clean them out. The consequence of that is we must expect to see data breaches. And actually, I think we're starting to get used to it. We're starting to realise that this happens and it's a price we pay. Similarly, whilst we can try and run systems that anonymise everyone, occasionally they're going to fail and anonymisation will be broken. Does that mean that we stop and we halt? Well, look at the airline industry. If we had worked on the basis that because airliners crash every so often, we weren't going to have an airline industry, we would have lost that benefit. And so I think that whilst we have to do all we can to minimise those problems, we also have to be practical if we want the benefits of the data. And in that area, obviously, a key area is privacy. And privacy often gets talked about as though it's one thing. And actually, it's a spectrum. There are some pieces of private information that we are extremely sensitive about. And whilst that may change over time, it will probably take a long time. And then there are other things which we still consider a private, but actually we're not that sensitive about. There's been some wonderful work done by various psychologists over the years. I remember one study where 18-year-olds were basically put through a process that put a price on their privacy, and it was $2.70. And the real important point was people think that their data is something they own, and if you try and steal it, they get very upset. But as long as they think they're getting something in return for that, they're often quite open to it. And in fact, the younger generation have become quite savvy in understanding the difference between security, where they'll often be very good about not giving information out that they shouldn't online, and privacy. But also, a lot of our idea of privacy comes from our cultural background. So, for example, I have a young lady, an Oxford graduate, got a first in history, very capable, and I asked her to let me look at her social media feeds to see what she was doing with them, because I try and understand these things. And I said to her, "Don't worry, I won't judge you." And I broke the promise within about 20 minutes when there was a picture of her very drunk at a party. And without thinking, I said to her, "You do realise you can't ever take this stuff back. Once it's out there, it's gone forever. You can't call it back." And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, what if you 20 years' time, you're the CEO of a FTSE 100 company?" And she looked at me and she said, "Well, all the other CEOs will have similar photos." And so I do think there will be movement, and I think we will see the definition of privacy. There may well be things that people still are very concerned about as we go forward. But we have to start thinking a little bit more like the airline industry here. There will be problems, but that shouldn't stop us doing things. When we look at this world, it is changing incredibly. It is very difficult to predict all the things that will happen. I'm reminded by Judge Neuberger's comment to me recently, and he said, "The only law you can rely on is the law of unintended consequences." And this was brought home to Microsoft a couple of weeks ago, that had a machine intelligence that was trained on the data of interactions with people on the internet to be a chatbot. And so the idea was that it would learn from the humans on the internet how to be more human, and this would be a great PR stunt for Microsoft. As some of you may know, within 24 hours it became a foul-mouthed, nasty sex bot, in that it had interacted with all these people and was saying outrageous things, and Microsoft's PR department had to pull the plug very quickly. Now, the interesting thing about that is, whilst no one wants to defend foul-mouthed Nazi sexpots, all it was doing was learning from the kind of people that sit on the internet talking to in chat rooms. And the interesting thing about this is that we didn't like what we saw in the mirror, but we were actually looking in a mirror here. So our data actually reflects ourselves in ways that we're also going to have to learn how to handle. So, a final note, I'm incredibly optimistic about this. I think that there's inevitability about many of the benefits, and I think the things like the ODI are great, but we have to be also very conscious of the strategic importance and make sure that we own the right value. And I think the last thing to say is that skills are going to be very important in these areas of using data. At the moment, we certainly have a skill shortage that needs to be addressed. But on the other hand, we in the UK are very, very strong in this area. And I think the recent initiative of the Turing Institute is incredibly important when we come to move into this age of data. Thank you very much.